Welcome to Behind the Lore, your backstage tour of the research it takes to make each episode of Lore Podcast. I'm Harry Marks, and today I'm sitting down with Jenna Rose Nethercott. We're exploring the research she did for Lore Legends Episode 10, Haunted Melodies. Today, Jenna Rose and I are discussing the metaphysical effects of music, musical curses, and strange rituals in hot tubs. Your support keeps us going, so once again, we're thrilled to have you behind the scenes with us. Please join us for a new episode of Behind the Lore. Hello, and welcome to Behind the Lore. I'm Harry Marks, and I'm here with Jenna Rose Nethercott, and we are talking about Lore Legends Episode 10, Haunted Melodies. Hello, Jenna Rose.
Hello, Harry. How would you feel if I sang the whole episode?
This is not a musical episode. This is not Once More with Feeling.
Everything in my heart is ideally Once More with Feeling. I really think that's genuinely a good musical, like, on its own.
It is.
For those who are unaware of the reference, it's the Buffy musical. Very dear to my heart. Wait, Harry, did you get that far in Buffy?
I had seen that episode when it first aired, long time ago. Was that 99, 2000, somewhere around there?
Uh-huh.
So I had seen it back when it was...
Oh, it was later than that, because the show started in 97, and it's in season 6.
But... Oh, that's right. Yeah, that was when Michelle Trachtenberg had already joined, I think. So
yeah, she joined in season 5.
Yeah, so that was towards the end. But I remember that episode. There are very few good musical episodes of TV series. I feel like Scrubs had a good one.
It did. Guy Love, a classic.
Yeah. And they had, like, real Broadway writers on that, too. So.
Yeah, well, what's amazing about, what I really love about Once More with Feeling is that all the actors do their own singing, where often in musical episodes, A, they're like jukebox musicals, which I have a lifelong vendetta against jukebox musicals. I think they're cheating, and I hate them. And B, they usually like bring in ringers to voice over the pre-existing actors' voices, which is lame. But in the Buffy one, they sing their own. Anyway, this is not a Buffy podcast as much as seems. Not, well, if I have anything to do with it, it will become one.
No, this is a musical episode, though.
Oh, right. I'm going to sing the whole episode. I'm sorry.
That's right. Your episode of Lore Legends here, this is one that you pitched and researched early on, all about musical-themed legends. And I'm just going to ask right off the bat, how important is music to you? And did you grow up in a musical household?
I did not. And I'm going to be honest, like, this is a real unpopular opinion amongst all the peoples of the world. But, like, it's not that important to me. Like, I obviously I like music. I listen to music. But I did not really grow up in a musical household. I grew up in a musicals household. But not a musical household. Like, my family, my parents don't play instruments. I have played throughout my life in various moments. I played clarinet as a kid, because as you can tell, I've always been very cool and very popular. And I played the fiddle for a few years. But no, I mean, basically, I have never been a particular musical person, at least as an adult. But my social circles are almost all musicians. So I end up very steeped in musical culture, specifically folk music. And I am very interested in, like, ethnomusicology and sort of the folkloric tie-ins of music.
Okay.
What about you? Did you grow up in a musical household?
I did. My father is a piano player. My parents used to own a music studio here in New Jersey for, I want to say, about 10 years. And they would give lessons, and they sold sheet music and accessories and guitars and stuff. My mother's a singer.
Play?
They used to have they still have a jazz combo. I used to play with them every once in a while.
Oh my gosh, a family band.
It was pretty cool. And I played a New York nightclub with them once for a cabaret night. That was pretty fun. Used to do weddings and cocktail hours and stuff with them because I'm a saxophone player. I also play bass and guitar. My brother is a trumpet player. So I grew up in a musical household. And like you, I grew up in a musicals household. My family, my mom and dad met doing theater together in college.
Oh, wow. So what show?
I honestly don't remember what show it was. I believe it was one it wasn't one my dad had written, because he and a friend of his had written they had done a version of Scrooge, a version of Christmas Carol.
Oh, fun.
A musical, but that's not where my parents met. I don't remember what show they met on, actually. But he was playing piano and she was in the show.
That's awesome. So you grew up with the family band and I grew up with the family clown act.
Yeah, I got my love of classic film and musicals from my parents.
And I got my love of deranged circus energy.
And puppets.
And puppets. Well, they were not puppeteers, so I got my puppet love elsewhere, I would say. My mother, again, I've said this before on this show, but it bears repeating. My father is a clown and my mother is a therapist. And here I am today.
So your dad is literally, but I am Pagliacci.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
That's great. So let's jump right into the first story, Violin Annie. She's this young girl, died young, was a violin player before her death. And where she is buried, I believe it's in Illinois. She is the most, I'm going to ask you, is she the most famous grave in the cemetery? Or is there anyone else buried there who's more notable?
I mean, there's a number of notable people that are buried in Elmwood Cemetery. For example, there were a bunch of famous, or at least famous for their time, military men, some governors, actually a number of very prominent abolitionists are buried in that cemetery, which is pretty cool. But honestly, it's Annie and her violin that people like go to see, you know?
Right.
Like if you Google Elmwood Cemetery, the only, like, you get the sort of official city page for the cemetery in your Google results, and then you get a bunch of articles about Violin Annie.
Okay. She must be then the most ornate gravestone there then, right? Because it's a full-figured, like it's a
girl.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a full, yeah, she's a full statue, life-size statue of a girl holding a violin. So she definitely is notable.
She pops, yeah.
She pops.
pops. You know, jumping in, this one was
I thought of a pun way too late. I was going to say she doesn't pops, she classicals. I'll see myself out.
Please do. That was, even
Bye.
For me,
and
even
that
for me,
was
the dad
this
joke
week's
came.
Episode.
This has been Lore Behind the Lore. I'm going to jump into the next story and this, you know, this. Our conversation here, developing an outline for it, was almost a little too difficult because there was almost nothing I left out from the outline in the main episode. I was able to include almost everything. But with regard to Gloomy Sunday, which is a song that has allegedly driven people to suicide and other unfortunate things, have you listened to it? I'm just curious. Did you get a chance to like hear the song and how did that make you feel?
Yeah, I did listen to it. It's a beautiful song. I recommend listening to it unless you are someone who is currently struggling with suicidal ideation, in which case don't listen to it. Not because it's a cursed song, but just because it is a song about suicide. And it is definitely a depressing song lyrically. But it's beautiful. It's a beautiful song. It has this like sort of old-timey almost like slow dirgy swing charm to it, and the lyrics are lovely despite being macabre. But yeah, no, it's a great song. Did you have a chance to listen to it?
I listened to both the I think it's Hungarian and the English, and it doesn't carry as much of a punch, I think, in English. I think actually here sort of like listening to English opera, translated opera in English, it doesn't carry the same weight as in the original language.
Yeah, and I mean, as I was researching it, time and time again, it said that the lyrics in the Hungarian are even more intense and sort of potent than the lyrics in English. It isn't a direct translation, as far as I understand. It was sort of like more the energy was translated into English than like a word-by-word translation.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I don't know. I liked the song. I thought it was nice. I like the so I've always said that like the music, my music taste is just like any song that makes me feel bad, that's what I want to listen to.
Just Florence and the Machine pumped directly into my veins.
Yeah, right. So, I'm going to see Boy Genius this week and I'm like beside myself with excitement. Cassandra's coming too. I might throw up. Do you listen to that band?
I do not.
It's Phoebe Bridgers, Lucy Dacus, and Julianne Baker, and I just, I would die for them, boys.
Look, you're all trying to get me to listen to Taylor Swift, and I'm like,
So I will say that I've been listening to Midnights, her new album, and it's excellent. It's genuinely a bop.
I listened to a little bit of 1989 over the weekend just to say I did, and it was all right. I mean, you know, she's got some good tunes in there. Her lyrics leave a bit to be desired for me, but it's fine.
I mean, I think she's doing exactly what she's setting out to do, which is that she is writing pop songs that will become hits. And she has I think, you know, she's a great musician, but she's a business mastermind.
Yes, that's true. I definitely admire her for what she did when that it was like some hedge fund manager bought her back catalog.
Oh, and yeah. She just re-recorded
all
it.
The albums.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that was just masterful.
Anyway, she did not write the Hungarian Suicide song. Let the record
show.
No,
she didn't. But I do want to talk about just music and, I guess, curses of music in general. You know, music seems to carry a curse with it wherever it goes. And I'm curious if you know the curse of the ninth.
I've heard of it, but I don't know the details of it. And you had sent me a link about it that I deliberately did not click on and read because I want you to tell me about it.
So this is, I believe I wrote about this for Cabinet as well. And so the curse of the ninth is the superstition that it began with Gustav Mahler, who he wrote his eighth symphony, and then while working on his ninth, he wrote his ninth, and then died with his 10th symphony incomplete. And so there's a superstition that composers, they get to the ninth symphony and they either finish it and die, or they never finish it to begin with. And so there's Beethoven, Schubert, Mahler, Dvorak, Tyshenko. All of these composers have died either just after writing their ninth or never completing. Beethoven famously never completed his ninth. And some people have chalked it up to, well, you're old by the time you get to your ninth symphony. It takes a long time to write nine symphonies. And so a lot of these composers are like, you know, in their 70s, 80s, 90s, and this is hundreds of years ago. But then certain composers, I want to say Dvorak, died young. I think he died when he was like 50 years old. I'm just checking now. And, you know, there are certain composers who have died well young, well before they should have finished their nine symphonies. And so to say that, well, they all died old doesn't really lend credence to the idea that it's not really a curse. So that's all. It's just this idea. It's sort of like the 27 Club, you know.
Sure.
Musicians, famous musicians, Jim Morrison from Nirvana, Kurt Cobain, you know, all died young, around 27 years old. I think Janis Joplin, Jimi Hendrix. So it's
Robert
that same
Johnson
kind of thing.
Starting it off.
Robert Johnson. Yep.
And I was just looking up, actually, as you were telling us this, the meaning of the number nine in numerology. And number nine, actually, in numerology, is associated with endings, completion.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. It represents like the fulfillment in goals and successes, but also an ending of a cycle. So
there's also the fear of the number 13. And Arnold Schoenberg, the composer, was terrified of the number 13, even though he was born on September 13th of 1874. So he avoided that number whenever he could. I think he wrote, you know, he wrote 12-tone compositions, never 13.
Amazing.
And I believe he wrote like 12 symphonies or something, and then when it got to number 13, he just jumped over to 14 or something like that.
Yeah, like when you're building building a hotel, you skip the 13th floor.
Yep. I think the only composer to beat the ninth is Philip Glass, who I never really liked.
Well, you were just saying this guy was on 12.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. That's true. He did too. But Philip Glass seems to be noted for, because I think what he did exactly that. He wrote his 10th symphony and then went back to finish his 9th.
Mm, sneaky.
Yeah. And then Anton Bruckner completed 10 symphonies. And it's not just the curse of like not finishing the 9th, but finishing the 9th and going on to the 10th and
right,
dying.
Right, totally.
So,
yeah, making it past.
Yeah.
Well.
So. Good for them.
Good for them. Power to them.
So one piece of the outline that didn't make it into the episode revolved around a particular healing ritual carried out by Franz Anton Mesmer using the glass harmonica invented by Ben Franklin. And I'm not convinced that the harmonica did the healing here. I think it was a lot of other feelings going on. But where do you stand on the healing power of music? You know, we know it can change moods, it can lift us up, or it can bring us down. But do you think it can alter us physically like this? Or was this simply people getting very excited in a hot tub?
I think it was definitely, in this particular instance, people getting excited in a hot tub. I forget, in the episode, did you include the description of what Mesmer was up to?
No, I didn't.
Okay, I'm going to do that.
It was a little too raunchy.
Yeah, it's fair, it's fair. But that's what Behind the Lore is for, right?
Exactly. So, this is After Dark.
Yeah. Welcome to Behind the Lore After Dark. So Franz Anton Mesmer, he was really into, he was like the father of animal magnetism. So he was a sexy little guy. And he used to host these seances with the glass harmonica. And this is I'm just going to read you this quote from BenjaminFranklinHouse.org because it describes this better than I ever could.
It's beautiful.
It's incredible. Okay, so, quote, Mesmer, dressed in a flowing lilac robe, waved his hands to the accompaniment of the unearthly strains of his harmonica. To treat more people at once, he had a tub filled with water and iron fillings. His patients, many of them wealthy ladies of leisure, sat around the tub and grasped one of the protruding iron rods. Handsome male assistants sat behind the patients and clasped them between their knees while applying, quote, gentle pressure upon the breasts of the ladies. According to one observer, quote, the cheeks of the ladies began to glow, their imaginations to become inflamed, and off they went, one after another, in convulsive fits.
I need an adult.
Yeah. So I don't think it was the harmonica that was doing this.
No.
TBH.
It was this Dear Penthouse letter that was doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. It was clearly these, quote, handsome male assistants sitting behind them and, like, feeling them up. But that said, you know, music does have physical and, like, physiological impacts on the body and, of course, the mind. You know, one of the really interesting things in how music is processed in the brain is that the same part of the brain that is responsible for processing almost exclusively like primal instincts, so like hunger, lust, fight or flight, also processes music, which implies that there's something deeply survivalist and like primal about our psychological connection to music. And because of that, like the same part of the brain that music passes through is the part of the brain that manipulates emotions, that controls emotions. So by passing through, it's almost like entering a drug into your brain that then swoops through your emotional center and alters it, which is why music hits us in the feels so hard, right? But
that's
in terms of, yeah, it is. I did a capstone project on it in high school.
Well, because I know there are people for whom music doesn't affect them at all. They have no interest in music, and not even just playing it, but not listening to it. They have no favorite bands. It's not something they listen to in their leisure time. So for them, music just doesn't hit them.
I think that's pretty uncommon, though, right? You know, like most people like music, at least a bit.
Yeah. And I don't know, maybe these people are sociopaths, but
it would be interesting to see if there was a neurological difference between people who connect deeply emotionally to music and people who don't.
I'd be interested to see that. And just I'd love to see like an MRI scan of their brains and what areas light up when they listen to music versus when someone who is affected by music listens to it.
Right.
And just, you know, what doesn't click.
And in terms of like physical healing, you know, sound healing is a prominent practice in which various instruments or like metal bowls or what have you are rung around the body. And, you know, it has this new agey woo-woo connotation that often goes alongside it. But if you think of it from a scientific perspective, there, you know, I don't really know much about sound healing, but the idea that sound is waves in the air, They are making a physical impact on space, on the air, and thus are also making a physical impact on the body. It is more than just like an idea. We almost think of sound and music as an idea, as something existing in the brain, but it is very much a physical thing in space. So surely it affects the body somehow. So yeah, I am curious about the science behind things like sound healing, though I haven't personally researched it.
There's a lot about music that I'd love to know more about. I mean, just from playing in bands, I used to play bass in a band at another place I worked at years and years ago, and just learning how like a bass player and a drummer fall into the pocket with each other and know how to play off of each other, and when one slows down, the other one slows down with them. And just like that communication piece of it and playing in a group, I'd love to just learn the psychology of that. And then stuff like, you know, have you seen Midsommar?
Yeah.
The horror film?
Yeah.
So that those scenes where Florence Pugh is crying with the group of women in that
cult.
Yes. And it's almost like this musical wailing among them, you know, the and it's very rhythmic and very musical in its sound, and it almost calms her and brings her back to her center after she witnesses these horrible things, like that kind of communal participation in something musical.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think music as a community bonding agent is, you know, we see that across cultures, across thousands and thousands of years. And so, yeah, I do wonder if there is some sort of specific purpose evolutionarily that we have developed as pack animals where music is one of the primary tools that we use in order to connect with each other and find solidarity with each other. And I mean, you know, we have a metronome inside of our bodies, right? Like we have our heartbeats that are consistently keeping this rhythmic time. So like our life force is tied to rhythm.
And
as well as like our breath, you know?
Yeah, we're both writers. When you write, if a sentence doesn't sound rhythmically correct, do you go back and change it? Do you hear like,
oh, absolutely. I write muttering aloud to myself. I find it difficult often to write in public places because I do write aloud. And cadence is so important to me. Now, granted, I come from poetry where cadence is so, so, so important. So even when I'm writing fiction or even when I'm writing lore episodes, I'm still writing them like a poet. So I mutter aloud to myself to make sure that the musicality is correct. And it's like if someone were to ask me how do I know what's correct and what's not? Like, can you describe what is correct and what isn't correct? I couldn't do it. I just know intuitively in my body. And that's one of the things that's really hard to teach with writing is like either you feel that cadence or you don't. Not to say you can't learn to feel it and learn to build it. I think that's one of those things that you learn by reading in the same way that like the more music you listen to, the more understanding you have of different genres and different tonalities, etc. But yeah, no, I couldn't tell you what makes a sentence correct or incorrect cadence wise. I just know it.
It's like trying to teach someone who's played classical violin all their life to play jazz. And, you know, I can teach you to play notes on a page. I can't teach you to improvise over the changes of Fly Me to the Moon.
Sure.
You know, you have to feel it. You have to, you know, almost not just be raised by it, but I feel like it's almost something innate, like you're born with it. So
cool stuff.
So my last question is, was there any research that you did on any of the topics covered in the episode that did not make it into the outline? Any cursed instruments or songs that, you know, you might want to save for a sequel Haunted Melodies episode?
Yeah, so the episode itself was pretty focused in its research, like because it was these four specific concrete stories, they all kind of made it in. And the ones that I wanted to include that didn't get included because we'd already covered them somewhere. But what I would love to do an episode on at some point is murder ballads. I love, love, love ballads, specifically like the child ballads, which, to be clear, are not ballads for children. They were collected by a man whose last name was Child. And this is sort of the definitive collection of English and Scottish ballads. And in this collection, which is like a multi-volume set, there are numbers and numbers of murder ballads. And, you know, we've covered some murder ballads in some episodes in the past. But yeah, I would love to do an entire episode all about murder ballads and specifically investigating some of the ballads that have their roots in historical acts of violence. Many of the murder ballads, I would say most murder ballads, are fictional inventions. But there are certainly some that are kind of reporting on or reimagining actual events. They were sort of like the true crime of their day. But I do think that we often assume more of them are based in the truth than actually are, unfortunately. Well, fortunately, not as interestingly, but fortunately, most of them are fiction. But yeah, I would love to deep dive into some of those and some of the classic ones, too, like Down by the Willow Garden and, I don't know, even like not murder ones, but just like the death ballads, like Sir Patrick Spence about this sailor and his whole crew who drowns. Like, I want to know the seed of that story.
Oh, that's awesome. Do you see modern versions of those in like I Don't Like Mondays by the Boomtown Rats?
I don't know what that is, but I believe you.
So that was a song written about around the mid-80s, late 80s. It was an elementary school shooting in San Diego. A girl, 16-year-old girl from her home across the street from the school, I believe she killed a janitor or maybe it was the principal, and then she was just shooting at kids on the playground. I don't think she killed any of the kids, but one of the administrators or one of the workers in the school did get killed, and she was arrested, and then the Boomtown Rats wrote a song. So when she was asked why you did it, all she said was, "I don't like Mondays." She did on like a Monday afternoon or something.
What day is this, Harry?
Oh, God.
Happy Monday. I don't know when this is airing, but we're recording it on a Monday.
Yeah. And then there's also, you know, Folsom Prison Blues.
Yeah. 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 I mean, that's the thing is like people are still obviously writing songs about things that have happened. And especially now we're in this like true crime heyday, which I have many complicated feelings about. I'm not a fan.
I do too.
But I'm sure that is not just in the podcast sphere. I'm sure that leaks into songwriting as well. I mean, I think hip hop has a number of pieces that are reporting on specific incidents within the community. And yeah, I don't know. There's ballads coming out all the time. I mean, the only thing, to be fair, that signifies a ballad is to be a ballad. It just means it's a narrative song. It's a song that tells a story.
Okay.
And that's the only difference between a ballad and not a ballad. So, yeah, there's new ballads being written all the time. And whether those ballads are based in true facts or fictional stories varies. But that has always been the case forever.
Yeah. Oh, and before someone screaming at the speaker tries to correct me, it was January 29th, 1979. That's when the shooting occurred. So the Boomtown Rats released the song a little bit later.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about using that as like a song topic. I don't know.
It's one of those things you never thought would happen. Just like, you know, when we were in school and Columbine happened, you know, it shocks the system. It shocks the population. So
absolutely, yeah. I wish it was still so shocking today.
I do too. And on that note,
yay!
We bid you adieu.
Thanks for joining in with us. Now, okay, here's a question. Do you think we'd be able to convince Aaron to do a musical episode of Lore?
I would absolutely love to write one. He'll never do it.
He would never do it. But it'd be so good.
I've always wanted to write a musical.
Me too. I have a musical in my head that I've been wanting to write. It's about the Fox Sisters. No one can steal that from me. Because I'm doing it. I have it all planned out.
Okay. I won't write about the Fox Sisters.
Don't do it.
Okay. Well, thank you, Jetta Rose.
Yeah. Thank you, Harry. Thank you, listeners. And if you have any spooky songs or if you have a cursed musical in your heart, let us know.
'Tis the season.
It's always the season here at Lore.
That's true. We're just a spirit Halloween all year round.
Oh, God bless Spirit Halloween. Do you think we can get a sponsorship from Spirit Halloween? If you work for Spirit Halloween and you're listening to this podcast, I swear to God, I'll do anything for you.
I just want the 20-foot skeleton in my yard.
Well, isn't that from Home Depot?
I think that is from Home Depot. I think they all sell it now. And there's a giant Stay Puft Marshmallow Man inflatable that's like 50 feet tall.
Inspiring.
Like, I want it all.
Anyway, have a lovely day, everyone. Thanks, Harry, for the chats.
My pleasure. Thank you for joining me.
Good. Bye.
And that does it for today's episode of Behind the Lore. A big thank you to Jenna Rose for spending time with me today. Did you know Lore and Lore Legends are part of a larger network of shows called Grim and Mild? And you can learn more about those shows and everything we do over at grimandmild.com. On behalf of the entire Lore team, thank you for your constant and generous support and for letting us tell you our stories. And until next time, thanks for listening.